Now, this advice isn't coming from someone who can't relate. Please believe, I've been through my fair share of ups and downs myself. But these experiences have shaped me, made me into the man I am today. So I only ask that you take a moment, that you give me a moment, and listen.
Hello, and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Today's guest works for Communities and Schools of Mid-America as a site coordinator. Every day, he is working inside the school, providing necessary supports to the students who need it the most. He is connecting with kids who have shut off the world due to being neglected and ignored. He is helping those who are suffering with the effects of poverty, and he is doing whatever it takes to help all kids succeed. Today, we are talking to Michael Williams, CIS site coordinator at Highland Park High School in Topeka, Kansas. Hey, Mike, how are you doing today?
Doing good.
Yeah, and so I just like naturally called you Mike, but what do you prefer to go by, Mike or Michael?
You know, it's kind of, I always get that question a lot. And for the longest, I was more of like a Michael kind of guy. But as I've gotten older and kind of pass by communications and relationships that we have with people at times, I know a lot of times Mike is an easy way for a lot of people to kind of remember my name. So it really doesn't bother me now. Honestly, I go by Coach Mike in the building. So
I guess Mike is okay.
Yeah, okay. I guess Mike is okay now.
Awesome. And have you ever been on a podcast before?
First time ever. Never been on a podcast. But I really don't have too big of an issue with speaking in front of people and stuff. So at least I'm not nervous right now, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely like number one. Do you listen to podcasts?
No, I do. Those are heavy in rotation.
Excellent.
In my cell phone. I'm always listening to something on Apple iTunes and something about leadership, something about coaching, something about teaching. Just try to find those little times to kind of sow some other seeds and learn something new.
Oh, I love that. I was going to ask what your favorite types were, but you went ahead and got to it. So that's awesome.
Beat you to it.
Yeah. So have you ever been on radio?
I've been on radio probably one time as a coach. When I was an assistant coach, our head coach was out for something. I can't remember what it was for, but they weekly would do a radio show, and you would go down to the local pancake house, the newspaper and radio guys would be there. They'd feed you breakfast and you talk about your past week's game. So I filled in for our head coach one time a couple years back and got my first radio broadcast premiere.
Ooh, I kind of love that. So you guys got together and had breakfast and recapped the week.
Oh, yeah. It was cool. You know, it's kind of different when you're kind of sitting back and you're actually the voice that people are listening to and you're not actually listening and doing the listening. So that was a little different. But, you know, conversation is conversation, and it kind of got going and took off on its own.
I kind of love that, though. I kind of want to see if there's a way that we could make this podcast do sort of the same thing where we get together and we have coffee and, you know, talk about the stories. I don't know. You know, we're still developing the podcast, so that just seems like a really cool idea to get together.
Sounds like a good idea. You know, anything to kind of loosen up the mood a little bit. I mean, you can't go wrong with coffee, especially in the work that we do. You can't go wrong with coffee.
Yes, there's never enough coffee.
Never.
So let's move into kind of the main portion of the podcast. Like I mentioned in the intro, we focus on talking about the story and the path that led people to connect with Communities and Schools. And I introduced you and mentioned that you are a staff member with Communities and Schools. And so what I want to kind of start with is would you mind telling us when that relationship first began between you and communities and schools?
Yeah, definitely. I'm at the beginning of my fifth year with communities and schools. So this relationship began dating back to 2014. I began out as an elementary school site coordinator at a local school here in Topeka and spent a few years there. And after that, I spent a few years at a local high school here in Topeka. And I just began my first year here at Highland Park, a local school in Topeka as well. But it was right up my alley. I had previously had a good amount of experience working in education for a number of years. I always like working with young people. Really, I always like working with people in general. I just think that's my personality. I'm a natural like communicator, and I'm, you know, down to earth, easy to get along with. You know, I love seeking and searching out relationships and trying to cultivate that in others. And so working with young people, working in schools had been something that I had did. And then that the work that communities and schools and nonprofit have been getting accomplished just was really intriguing. And it just kind of, you know, set me on a path to where I am right now.
So when did you, let me go back a little bit. So did you first hear about communities and schools whenever you saw the job posting, or did you know of it before you saw the job posting?
Yeah, I had worked in education after I had got out of high school, or not out of high school, but out of college. And so we're talking about anywhere from about 4 to 6 years in different roles. And a colleague that I had worked with was working with communities and schools at the time. So I really wasn't aware exactly what it was that he was doing or what communities and schools was doing at the time. Me and his colleague of mine, we just became pretty good friends. We talked pretty regularly. And he always told me, he said, if this job comes open with this nonprofit I work for, I'm going to recommend you. And so, you know, you hear that and you kind of just kind of keep it going and keep it moving. Hey, man, definitely do it if it comes up, man. I'm not going to turn down a quality job offer by no means. So, you know, it happened. And we were moving into about the summertime of that school year back in 2014. And I get a phone call from him and he tells me to look into this position that it came up. It'd be right up my alley. Thought I'd be pretty good at it. And so I did. I looked into it. And I want to say, once I applied a few times before I actually got the job with communities and schools. But I did. I applied. I put in. And honestly, when I had initially applied for the job, I wasn't all the way fully still aware about what it was. And it wasn't until fully that I had got in for an interview and stuff that I really began to kind of understand the depth of, you know, the services that we're doing with communities and school, the scope and the amount of kids that we're able to actually affect and connect with. And then from there, it was just a match that was made, because it's definitely set my career in a whole different trajectory, giving me understanding into, you know, issues and things that plague kids, but then also just the ways that we can support them and provide them with the outlet to keep them in school and hopefully get them graduated on down the line.
So you mentioned that you have been a site coordinator at a couple different schools. Why did you change schools?
Yeah, I was, so prior to communities and schools, one of my other roles in the building, I had been a high school basketball coach. Mm-hmm. And so when I had first got hired on with a nonprofit, I was kind of in limbo in a high school coaching job that I was coming out of. And so I was originally supposed to be at the school that I'm at right now, Highland Park, 5 years ago. Oh. But I had, just like I said, I was in limbo on the basketball coaching job, and it was kind of weird. Our head coach had retired at the time, and I didn't get the head coaching job. I was still pretty young. And when I got offered the Highland Park site coordinator job, that was at the same high school I had been a coach at and trying to get the head coaching job at. And so I just kind of felt like it wasn't the right fit at the time. And so there was an opportunity that came out at an elementary school, actually in the same feeder system that would feed into Highland Park. And so it was a no-brainer at that time. I was familiar with the community. I'm from Topeka, lived in Topeka my whole life, dang near. So it was really an easy transition, you know, from not taking a high school site coordinator job and moving into the elementary school. And I had never worked with young people in the not just young people, but elementary school age kids, in the educational process. I had always worked at the high school, from my time since I had been in education up to this point in my career. And so I just thought it was something I wanted to get into, something I wanted to look at. You know, from working in schools, you always hear the stories about teachers. Like you hear the high school teacher say, "Oh, I could never work with elementary mm-hmm. school kids." And you hear the elementary school teachers like, "Oh, I could never work with high school kids." But I just never looked at it like that. From being a coach, I had always coached kids from high school to middle school to elementary school, whether it was actually kids on my team or kids, whether it was a camp or a clinic that we were putting on. So I never had an issue dealing with high school kids or elementary school kids. Like I said earlier, I was a people person. Yeah. I still am. And so I was just intrigued by the opportunity to be able to work at the elementary school level. I knew I hadn't been there. I thought it was experience that I could kind of get. And honestly, that was the best decision because those were some of the best 2 years of my life working at Ross Elementary for the 2 years that I did.
That. So what would you say are the main differences between working with elementary school kids and working with high school kids?
I mean, I think the very first one that jumps out is the amount of hugs that you get in the daytime. Even though my hug count probably is going up at Highland Park just because I'm getting to know kids more. But you can never count the amount of hugs that you get with the young kids. And I think it's more so to people that they are, you know, able to connect with and create a relationship with. But I think like just the contact, you get genuine. I think over time with high school kids, you grow and gain genuine contact with them and genuine relationships and communication after they fully believe that they can trust you and you begin to show them that you'll continuously be there for them. A lot of time for young kids, you get that right away, especially if you're showing that stuff right away. They buy into you right away. They're seeking that relationship. So I think the amount of hugs that I get, that was one just being funny with. But then also I think, you know, another, you know, main difference that I began to see is at the elementary school level that we were able to identify needs in kids and things that were needed to support them before they became maybe like a behavior pattern or became ingrained into one's character. You know, when you're dealing with preschool, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth grade kids, you know, a lot of times you're dealing with issues or things that if they're not dealt with, they're hard to break when they get into middle school and high school. You know, they're really, really hard to break. So what I began to see at the elementary school level is just the opportunity to support kids when their needs are first showing and in hopes that we can do our due diligence and connect with the school and connect with families and connect personally, individually with those kids and hope that we could save them before some of the things that could hinder them on down the line. I think that was the biggest thing I seen at the elementary school level, just being able to preemptive strike circumstances, situations and mindsets and try to get the kids reeled in before it kind of got out of control.
You mentioned earlier that the elementary school that you went into, it was part of a feeder system, which I think is so important. And so if anybody's listening to this and they don't really understand what that means, it means that the CIS program was at the elementary school, the middle school, and the high school that those students would be going to. So once they started having a CIS site coordinator, maybe at preschool or kindergarten, they could continue to have that support throughout the rest of their education, which is it's so essential.
It is. I mean, that makes me want to jump in just because, like I said, I was supposed to be at Highland Park initially, so 5 years ago, and I ended up moving over to Ross. And it's so powerful right now because I'm coming across kids who I had on my caseload at Ross when they were in the fifth grade. And now they're in high school. And, you know, it's made it easier to create relationships. It's made it easier for trust because these are kids who I have served or connected with or, you know, developed rapport with 4 or 5 years ago. And to see them grown and to see them begin in their high school path, it's amazing. It's amazing. I actually do have a few kids currently on my caseload now who I had on caseload when I was at Ross. I
think that's pretty special. And you're going to get to see them graduate in a couple of years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, being able to, like, before your eyes, really see the model of communities and schools, CIS, see it played out. I mean, being able to keep kids on track, keeping them in school, with the end goal of graduation. And so for these kids that I'm able to come back and connect with now, I'm definitely seeing that right before my eyes, right before my eyes.
So you keep mentioning the word connect and connecting with students. And with your experience working with students of various ages, what are some of the unique ways in which you are connecting with them?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, you know, what we offer or what our, you know, the model of our nonprofit allows us to do is, you know, providing kids with a positive adult, you know, that positive one-on-one connection. And, you know, I use the word connect a lot because that's where your relationships begin at. Relationships can't, well, at least strong, long-lasting relationships can't be built and attained to without some sort of a connection. And so when you talk about ways to connect with kids, you know, for every kid it's different. You know, for every kid, it might be a high in the hallway every day. For every kid, it might be following up and remembering what their favorite TV show was, what their favorite food was, what they like to do in their spare time. For another kid, it's getting them involved with a program or an event and just allowing that connection to be at a time where we're able to plug them in on a service or something that we're doing as site coordinators, that's positive, that allows them to get a different experience. But ultimately, all the while, trying to build and grow a relationship. And, you know, we keep talking about connect and connecting and connection, because that's how you get kids to buy into what you're trying to do. And I think that's an everyday thing. I don't think it's something that happens right away. I don't think it happens overnight. I, at times, err on the marathon approach, or the visionary approach, or the idea of longevity, knowing that if I want a quality relationship with this young person, you know, it's not going to just happen overnight. I got to continually show up, continually be there for support, continually have my office door open, continually find ways and lanes of communication, whether, you know, through face-to-face or email, office phone. You know, there's times when kids on my caseload or kids that I began to connect with through communities and schools, they have my cell phone number just so I'm just able to be reached and then able to be connected with as well too. But, you know, it just takes on so many different ways. And, you know, there's also going to probably be ways and methods of, you know, connecting with kids that I haven't already explored yet as well too, because for each kid, it'll be different. And I think it's on us as site coordinators to be creative and to be proactive to find and search for those different methods according to the kid that we're dealing with.
Yeah. I think that what you were just talking about is one of the key things that makes you and so many of our site coordinators really successful at their job, is understanding that every single student comes to you with a unique experience and a unique set of problems and potential barriers that it's up to you to kind of work with and earn that trust in order to then help remove those barriers.
Yes, ma'am.
So in that same kind of mind thought, what are some of your favorite supports that you've provided throughout your time with CIS to students and or their families?
Oh, yeah. That takes me back. You know, I think about things that we did at the elementary school level. I'm so big on with me being a coach, I'm so big on like teaching and life lessons. And so when I was at Ross, we would do boys groups. We had a few boys groups going on. I always liked, you know, the smaller group setting, being able to get kids kind of out of the big group and out and into their comfort zone a little bit. And I think it's more intimate in those settings. It's a little bit more direct in those settings as well too. And we're able to kind of dig a little bit deeper, you know, on the kids. And then also at times if there's, you know, specific circumstances or things going on. So we did boys groups. You know, another cool support that I did when I was at the elementary school, our school, our kids were not getting grades at the time. So all of the academic growth, especially for kids kindergarten through, I want to say fourth grade, was based on reading levels. And, you know, it was based on proficient, advanced. And so they would get graded out in that way. And so we partnered up with our local library and they have a what's known as a bookmobile, and it travels around throughout the community. And the bookmobile itself is designed towards adults. So it has the adult reading. So somebody can't make it to the library, the bookmobile may show up in the grocery store in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It may show up at the local elementary school in the evening time. Well, what we did was we got together with the library and got what was known as the Adventure Mobile, which was the kids' version of the bookmobile, and got it brought to our elementary school. And it came every Friday. We had a list of teachers that would sign up. They would bring their kids out every Friday. And we did this for a whole school year. And then over the time of doing that, we were able to track reading scores and actually see differences in reading levels jumping up because the kids were getting more access to books. Another thing we did at the elementary school level, again, moving in the idea of reading and the importance that was placed on reading it within our district, we set up what was known as a little free library book box. Yeah. And so on campus at our elementary school, it was just a small box that was accessible to anybody who came on campus. And we would keep it filled with books, children's books, different theme books. There's a local nonprofit here in Topeka called Women's Empowerment. They would come out biweekly and then sometimes monthly, depending on how fast the books would turn over. And they would fill the book box up. And so it was my job as a site coordinator to go around and communicate to the different classes and the students how it actually worked. And so not only did it encourage reading, but it encouraged reading while also encouraging good stewardship, because the books were, we weren't hunting nobody down if the books came up missing. I mean, that was the idea. We wanted kids to have books. But we encouraged the kids that after they got done reading the books to turn their books back in. So we were able to continually reuse them. Someone else could get involved in it. And then we also opened it up for our kids to donate books as well, too. And, you know, those specific to the elementary school, those programs, those are, you know, a few of many that we did, but they jump out at me because they're still going on at the elementary school to this day. And I think I think that's big, because I think that's one thing as a site coordinator that I see is, you know, your ability, not that we're going to, like, everybody's going to move like I've moved over the last 5 years, but we hope that we can provide programming that can sustain, you know, and that can be duplicated over time. And I think it was powerful to see, you know, myself leave and another site coordinator come in and be able to pick up the pieces to a program that we already had in place that was working, and they could pick it up and duplicate it themselves and keep it going. So I think those were important. But as you know, and then fast forward and, you know, getting to the high school level, again, still moving in the idea of, you know, small group setting. I piloted last year while I was at Topeka West, what's known as the BSU, which is a Black Student Union, which is a club and a group that's probably most likely at a lot of schools nationwide. But it wasn't at Topeka West at my time during there. And what it's about is you need a building sponsor, a teacher, a staff member from the school, just to take over the club and lead it and run it. Mm-hmm. And I am a graduate of Topeka West years ago, and that club was active when I was in school. But over time, it had kind of faded away. And so I kind of felt like there was a need for, you know, young students of color, minority students, African-American kids, to kind of get into a space that didn't necessarily, it didn't alienate other groups, but it was just a space that was specific to education and learning, specific to African-American and Black culture. And it was cool because, you know, it wasn't a space only, like I said, it wasn't just for African-American kids. We had European-American kids, Hispanic, and that was the idea of the group, to be all inclusive, but to also begin to educate and empower kids specific to culture. So that's been cool. That's been something since I came over to Highland Park, that I'm right back in the ground stages of getting that kicked off and going on at Highland Park.
I was going to ask if there was one over there.
There was. The sponsor had just taken another job, and so it came open to me. And so we're actually getting it going, you know, beginning. I already had meetings this year. Last week came off an event that we went to at KU with students representing from that group. Got t-shirts out, getting the club branded, looking to kind of begin to take it off and kind of hope that it can sustain and move like the one did at Topeka West, because the one at Topeka West really, really gained traction and took off really well. We just did it differently. Every meeting that we had was based on we set up agendas, and within those agendas, we had specific talking points. We had quotes. We had topics to talk about. We had, you know, current events, current news. So it just wasn't just a playtime and a fun time. We were actually trying to get down and trying to teach the kids something. And that's also a group or a club. Since I've left Topeka West, that's another example of something that's been sustained, been able to be picked up. And now our current site coordinator over there right now is actually the lead in that club and group over at Topeka West right now.
Excellent. Dude, well done.
Pretty cool. It's cool. It is. Well, I think like a lot of programming that we're able to as site coordinators, the reality of it is that it should be able to be duplicated in other schools. If the school has the need and the site coordinator has the background or the desire to duplicate the program. But I do. I think there's so many site coordinators within our network and probably throughout the country that are doing good things and doing good programs at their schools, that when they're done the right way, that we, as other site coordinators in other spots in schools, could try to utilize that. You know, I don't think at times it's not about reinventing the wheel, right, or just as long as we can have a blueprint of it and have some kind of guiding light or some way to get to the end result. And if it applies to our school and we can implement it, mm-hmm, I feel like we should try to utilize those things and do that.
Well, and one of the things that I love that you're pointing out without saying it is that you are going into these schools and doing exactly what site coordinators do, is looking at what the needs are that are unique to that school and then leveraging your own personal resources as well, you know, experience that you may have or knowledge that you may have, and then applying it to the needs that are within the school and creating a solution to fulfill the need. And I think that's just awesome.
Yeah, it's so important.
Yeah.
It's so important. I mean, every school is different. You know, I've learned that in 5 years being at three different schools. Mm-hmm. All with varying differences. There are things that are the same. Mm-hmm. There are things that are the same, and some things that can be applied to each situation. But then there's also a list of things that we have to be specific to, yeah, and be aware of, specific to the circumstance and the school that we're working in and in. And so I've definitely seen that firsthand.
What's like your goal or your goals that you are hoping to achieve as a site coordinator?
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Goal or goals. I think one of the main ones is always to impact young people. Mm-hmm. You know, I can look back through adults and teachers and coaches, family members, you know, mom or a dad or an uncle, just an adult that just made an impact on my life. And it's so powerful now as a man, because now, you know, you would almost think that you kind of graduate from that impact, but you never really do. Mm-hmm. And so it begins to show me personally how that impact from people like that, how it truly lasts a lifetime, and how it truly lasts a long time. And I think one of the main things that I want to do, and I hope that I've done up to this point of my 5 years of being with CIS and being a site coordinator, it's just impacted kids. You know, I don't want to necessarily be like the nag and I got to go see, here's a way to go, another lecture. But that's why I was talking so much earlier about connecting.
Right.
Because I think when you're connecting and you're relating, young people, they don't get confused what you're trying to get accomplished. And I think that, like we said earlier, why the relationship is so big. So on top of impacting and also connecting is another goal that I want to have. I want to create relationships. You know, I want to create, you know, I want to be able to see a high school kid 5 years from now. Well, they won't be a high school kid 5 years from now, but a past kid, mm-hmm, or young person who I've been able to work with over the years. And I want to see them in a grocery store, you know, doing well with their family. I want to read about them on Facebook. I want to see them accomplishing and getting things done. And I think when you talk about goals, I think those are things that I want to get done. Of course, I want to have amazing programs, and I want to, you know, create things specific to my school that are creative and that can sustain and last. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest thing is that I want the young people that I come in contact with to just get something and take away from me. And then, you know, taking it a step further, yeah, I want the adults that you come in contact with, you know, with community schools being a nonprofit, that we come into the schools and have to partner so much with school officials, that I want the schools seeing CIS in a positive light. Mm-hmm. I want them looking at us as a resource. I want them relying on us to get a job done that they're not able to get done. Not that they're incapable, but it's because we're open to other resources that can enhance what they're able to do.
Right.
And so on top of being able to connect with kids, which is my first work that I want to get done, I want to make sure that the school, the teachers, the staff, the administrators, the district personnel that we work for, that they look at us as a resource and somebody that they can rely on in a school setting.
Oh my gosh. Well, no wonder you're so busy. You have so many goals, but they're great. And I understand it. And also, I would highly encourage you and anybody else who was really interested in what Mike was saying about having that lasting impact on students to listen to the episode right previous to this one, the one that we did with Richard Prophet, because he has a really amazing story about creating a lasting impact with students. So definitely check it out. We are going to wrap up this first portion here in just a little bit, but before we do that, I want to ask if you wouldn't mind sharing one of your favorite success stories, if you can do so without sharing the student's name.
Oh, yeah. I can do
okay,
that.
Okay, bring it on.
Well, we said earlier, I go by Coach Mike in the building. And so, you know, still moving around and recently taking the site coordinator job at Highland Park. Another role that I have in the building is I'm the head boys basketball coach. And so that's why my voice is so raspy right now. People, I don't usually talk like this, just a lot of yelling and stuff like that. That's why I sound like this now. As a coach, you know, well, just in education in general, you're trying to find whatever we can to keep kids motivated, to keep them on track, to get them to graduate, to get them to see the silver lining in their education. And one thing that I found is that sports is such a powerful tool to get kids to do just that. It works, you know, I would hope that it would work for everyone, but it works for some at times, not all, but it works for some. And those that are able to harness that power are able to really just have good experiences in high school and thereafter. So we had a young man at Topeka West last year when I was there. He transferred to Topeka West. So my first year I was at West, he wasn't there. I went to another high school locally in the city, and he transferred to Topeka West last year. And what jumped right out as we're having an open gym early on in the school year. I did a program over at Topeka West called Night Hoops, where kids would be able to come in and use the gym, and I would be their building sponsor, and they wouldn't get kicked out. And I would feed them, and we would have like a huddle up, like a little brief meeting, and I would just talk some life lessons to them. And now I turn loose and let them go. And so I remember one of the first Night Hoops we had last year, this kid is in there and he's like balling, like, man, he's like playing, like he's playing defense and he's making shots and he's making layups and getting his teammates involved. And I'm like, who is this guy? So I go, I introduce myself to him, kind of get to know him and tell him he transferred and he was going to be interested in playing ball. And so, well, you know, right away when you hear an athlete talking about playing basketball, you know, we right away, the site coordinator in me gets to, well, let me look at his story and let me check him out on Power School and check his attendance and his behavior and his grades. And right when we went there, that's where the red flags came up. So red flags came up, and then come to find out, he transferred from Topeka High, but at Topeka High, he had been ineligible for the last year. So he didn't even play. And so he was a junior last year. So his time in high school was running down. And a lot of time for juniors, it's tougher for kids as you age to be involved, especially with basketball. As we have juniors and seniors, we begin to hope that they already got it together and you can trust them a little bit more and you're not worried about them as much off the court. And at times when we get those kids that are juniors and seniors that aren't doing those things, we tend to not keep them involved with the sport because we know you're close to being 18, you're close to graduation. You got to kind of have some things together from a basketball standpoint. So, but my site coordinator in me wants to save every kid. Mm-hmm. And so I go to my head coach and we're talking about this kid, and my head coach was not one to keep guys. He wasn't one to use basketball as that saving tool. He kind of wanted kids to already have it together. So I went to him and was like, hey, coach, I know you're not with this. I know you haven't been, but I just feel like we can support this young man. And I kind of gave him a rundown of what communities and schools is and what I do and what I could do from a site coordinator for him if he was adding to my caseload. And so coach thought about it. So throughout this time, I'm staying connected with the young man, kind of getting to know him a little bit, watching him, kind of noticing that he is struggling. And a couple of days later, my coach comes to me and says, if you're able to get him eligible, if you're able to have him ready for tryouts, we'll do it. And I'll leave it to you. So we kind of went to work. And so that exactly happened. He was ineligible for the first semester of the school year last year. I added him to my caseload. I met with him regularly, dang near daily. I kept him involved with Night Hoops. I made it a point that he got involved with our preseason conditioning program at Topeka West last year. And he showed up every day. And not only did he show up every day, but his grades slowly started to come up. So, you know, our coach went all the way still sold. Like I said, he wasn't one to – he just wanted the guys that he wanted around. And so he gave him a stipulation, and he had to sit out all of first semester. And in all reality, he was going to have to anyway because he was ineligible. And he wasn't going to get practice gear. He wasn't going to get travel gear. He was going to show up in his own gear, practice with us. He was going to show us if he really wanted to be a part of the team. And he did this, just that. He showed up. He got his grades up. He got eligible second semester. He didn't miss a practice. And he played every game the second semester of the school year. So much so that as the season was wrapping up earlier this year, while I was still over at West, he was a kid that we penciled in on our varsity. He was going to be one of our top 8 to 10 players. He was a guy that we were going to be counting on. We're going in the summer over there, and we're trying to find ways to get him involved in everything that we're doing. And it just really, really made me think about communities and schools and the work that we do from a caseload and a case management standpoint, and how like other educators in the building at times don't see the worth and the need to dig in and invest in kids. But because of the investment that we have as site coordinators and a relationship and a connection that we're able to make with kids, and just the knowledge that we have that if you just show you care and you're there for a young person, they can get it together. And that was a prime example of it. I just thought it was amazing. You know, he finished off the semester, played every game, made it to practice. We began to help him be able to sift through some of his struggles, whether it was in the classroom, organization, getting a task and a job done, understanding planning, you know, so many things that young people have to be mindful of and be good at, you know, to be successful at school. And so he began to do those things. And so that is a success story that really sticks. And I think about regularly, because I still think about that young man to this day. We still have communication and contact, even though I'm not at Highland Park. I mean, at Topeka West.
And he's a senior this year, correct?
He's a senior this year.
And how's he doing? Yeah. Is he playing basketball again?
They actually have tryouts. Our tryouts here locally begin on Monday. It's looking like he's going to be trying out.
He's eligible still?
He's eligible. He's at least in a position to get done what he's got to get done. You know, over the next week, it'll be on him, you know, to kind of whether or not he makes a team and finishes the deal. But yeah, he's at least in a good spot to give himself that opportunity.
Has he ever talked to you about what it was like having your help?
You know, kinda. You know, another thing is, you know, you'll get some young people who right away they can recognize the support. And you know, we don't never do it for the pat on the back or the recognition, but some recognize it right away. And then for some, you know, that it takes a little bit of time. This young man wasn't that. I mean, he would constantly tell me. I mean, I was his go-to guy. I was his ride to practice. I was his ride home. I mean, I was his mom would vent to me about him. I mean, I was everything for this young man at times. But he always made it a point to thank me. He always made it a point to bring it to my attention. You know, and on top of that, his father wasn't around. And so I think that I showed up for him as a void that he had. And I think he recognized that right away. And I think when you're genuine with your support and it's not like, oh, well, I'm doing this so I can come back and, oh, I told you so. And when you can relate, I mean, I'm just like a lot of these young people, a lot of their struggles and things they've been through, I've been through myself. And I think he could see that in me a lot. And I was genuine with him, or at least tried to be. And he recognized that regularly and was always thanking me and letting me know that he was appreciative for what we're doing and what we've been able to accomplish over the last year.
Wow. That's it always just sort of affects me so heavy whenever I hear firsthand from site coordinators about the work that you guys do. It's so impressive, and it has such a ripple effect. You know, it's not just the effect that you have on the students, but then it's the effect that you have on the students' families and on the staff members and the administrators that work in the school that you work in, and then also on your colleagues. You know, it's just really impactful. So thank you so much for sharing that success story and for giving us an insight into what it's like to be a site coordinator and to work with a student the way that you have. So we're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom. So stay tuned. Welcome back. So normally at this time, I would ask Michael to read his letter that he brought. But instead, I actually want to follow up on a piece that he brought up at the end of our conversation right before the break. So he talked about how he was able to relate to the students that he works with because they have some similar experiences. And during the break, I asked Michael if it was okay for us to kind of go into some more of those details. So Michael, if you don't mind sharing a little bit more about that, that'd be great.
Yeah, no, definitely. I said that earlier just because I see a lot of myself and the young people that I connect with and work with and have over the years. And, my childhood, I had a really, really good childhood. You know, I was raised by my mother and father, and they did such a good job. I mean, I was raised up in a family that definitely didn't lack for love. I think that's the one of the lasting impacts that my mom left on me is love. I mean, there wasn't a day that went by that me and my brother didn't hear, "I love you." There wasn't a day that went by that we didn't wake up to a kiss on our forehead or our cheek. And there wasn't a night that we didn't go to bed that we didn't hear both, a kiss on the forehead or a cheek and "I love you" again. We got that regularly. Now, you know, with that being said, you know, with the love that we did get and we gained, we had our fair share of struggles. My parents battled separation, you know, especially young and early on in our life where, you know, my dad was in and out, you know, there's arguing and fighting, dad being thrown out, mom running through the house upset. We seen that. We were never the richest family. That's why I always highlight the love that we shared. We were never the richest family, but we didn't go without. We had the necessary items of what we needed and stuff. But there was a certain level of humility that we learned just from our childhood. As I also go in and begin to talk about like relating to kids, you know, so many of the young people that we connect with, and we work with and we work for, that we serve, they come from some pretty trying backgrounds, you know. And, you know, my mom, she's battled drug addiction her whole life. Ultimately succumbing to it in 2015, you know, most recently. We were around that, you know, just being young, you know, you don't know. I mean, you love mom and you love dad, because that's what they are, their mom or dad. And you begin to accept them, you know, regardless of what circumstance they're in or where they come from or what they do. And it's not until you begin to get older that you really begin to put it together, like, oh, but there's something not right about what's going on and stuff. And so it took me to get older, to begin to start to really see things happening in my mother's life that bothered me and hurt me. That hurt, you know, me and my brother alike. But that's why I see it so much in our kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I see it so much in our kids. When I see our kids at times struggle financially, I can relate. You know, I mean, I remember Christmases where there wasn't Christmas. But again, it goes back to the love piece. I hear circumstances or situations where kids going through and a mom or dad's locked up. You know, my mother was locked up when I was growing up at times. Drug abuse and stuff going on in some of our kids' homes. That stuff was going on in my home when I was young and growing up. And I think the biggest thing that it did for me is it caused me not to judge people, because I get it and I can relate and I understand. And so it causes me to, and I heard you say something earlier, like making an impact with your colleagues. Mm-hmm. And I think like at times that's where I think I see is an impact made with colleagues. I'm not doing it intentionally. Like I'm not doing it to impact my colleagues, but I mean, there's been so many times the kid at school that every teacher's talking about in the teacher's lounge is my best friend. I mean, it's crazy. Like I had a young man I was really close with over the last years, the other high school I was at, and it never failed. I get a teacher asking me, "How are you around him? How?" But it just, because I'm not judging him, because his flaws that made me jump out at you, I don't see as his flaws. And also I think it could be is because his same flaws are probably a flaw or two that I have on the inside of me as well too. And I think like that perspective, you know, from my childhood and growing up in that way and around those things has caused me to be so focused on, you know, that same idea of connection, you know, like what we've been talking about throughout our time together today is just connection. I think it's easy to connect. It's easy to want to connect with someone where there's really no difference in your circumstances. And so, you know, I think that's my experiences have helped me with the young people and at the schools that I've worked at. It's helped me be empathetic. It's helped me be, you know, show humility. And it's helped me most of all just to care, you know, and just to care. And so, you know, but going through those things, being grateful that I did, and then also just trying to find ways of daily using those experiences from my childhood and with my family to apply to the young people and in the schools that we work at today.
Well, I can say with 100% certainty that those students are really lucky to have you, Michael, because you obviously do care a lot. And so I'm so glad that you are a site coordinator and that you are able to be in those schools every day to help out those kids who really need it. I would really love to hear your letter. I did ask you to bring one. Excellent.
I got it.
And the only guideline that I give whenever I ask people to bring a letter is that it comes from the heart, which I can tell will have, that was like no problem from you. I can't imagine that you would be able to write something that wasn't heartfelt. So I also warned you that I was going to ask you to read it aloud during the podcast.
You did.
Okay.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
Yeah. If you would please read your letter.
I got you. Dear student, how are you? I hope all is well. Matter of fact, I hope this letter meets you doing very well. I love the opportunity to connect with our kids, no matter what it is. Today is a letter. As a site coordinator, I'm given access to the lives of our students at a very deep level, seeing some of the most personal situations that our kids go through. But it does something to me. It motivates me. It motivates me to support. This insight into the struggles that affects the lives of our kids not only motivates, but makes me want to help. And to help today, I just want to pass along three pieces of advice. Advice that I wish I had when I was your age. Now, this advice isn't coming from someone who can't relate. Please believe I've been through my fair share of ups and downs myself. But these experiences have shaped me, made me into the man I am today. So I only ask that you take a moment, that you give me a moment, and listen, in hopes of passing along a few things to help you as well. The first thing I want to encourage you is to believe. Believe in yourself. Believe in what you can do. Believe in what you're doing. And believe in what you will do. I think belief is foundational for each person. We need it. If we don't believe, who will? Second is persevere. The Webster definition of persevere is to continue in a course of action, even in the face of difficulty or with little or no prospect of success. We all need this because nothing in life is, will, or has been easy, at least nothing that's worth or of importance. So persevere, stick to it, don't give up. And lastly, what I want to pass along is enjoy your youth. There's a saying that youth is wasted on the young. Don't let that be you. Enjoy your energy, your vitality, your friends, and embrace things. Embrace your opportunities. Embrace your challenges. And embrace the potential that's in front of you in your youth. I sat back and thought about this letter, and all I wanted to do was give you something that could help. Some things that helped me. Well, they would have helped me if I was looking at them at the time. I really wish as I look back that I would have been mindful enough to just slow down and pay attention to some of these things. So I gave them to you, and I hope that you do just that. And never forget that even in light of where you are, you will end up somewhere. My only question is, where will you be? Sincerely yours, Michael Williams.
That was a really great letter, Michael. Whenever you read that aloud, what is it that you feel?
Encouragement. You know, I've been asked over the last month to do a couple different speaking engagements for our kids at Highland Park. And it has been kind of, you know, like what was inside the letter, and it was just encouraging kids. I mean, I feel like at times young people get so caught up in social media and, you know, the new craze or the new fad, or, you know, following their peers, or, you know, at times, like so many of the kids that we work with, mm-hmm. Coming from circumstances that aren't the best. And so they don't get true wisdom, I guess you could say, or perspective, or, you know, a different way of looking at things and doing things. And so as I think back to this letter, like, I just want to encourage young people. I want to give them some thoughts, some things to consider that maybe they haven't heard, or maybe that they're not getting on a regular basis, you know, in hopes that they could possibly change, you know, your perspective. You know, I really think, like, you know, when you change the way you look at things, what you look at changes, you know? And so if we can just begin to possibly encourage each other, empower each other, understand the power of our words, I think that really would help the young people around us, the kids that we're working with, helping society in general.
I agree. And I think that talking about it and sharing those positive aspects like you're doing is a really great place to start. So thank you. We're going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back with Michael for just a couple extra credit questions. And we are back. Okay, Mike, are you ready for some extra credit questions?
Oh, yeah. You can't turn down free points now when you say extra credit.
Okay, you've got three questions. The first one is, what is your favorite part about being a CIS site coordinator?
Oh, man. The flexibility. You know, we're given as site coordinators, you know, the ability to come into a school and diagnose needs, and then from there, connect with the right resources, the right people, the right programs to meet those needs. And so what it's allowed me to do is it's just allowed me to use my personal creativity to stay in line with things that I believe in, things that I'm passionate about, and then implement that into the model for the school that I'm working at. So, you know, I love the opportunity to be creative and the flexibility that the job gives us to be ourselves.
Excellent. So question number two would be, what is your least favorite part of the job?
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. And you know that your boss and the CEO is definitely
going to Everybody's going to hear. No, I would, you know, like I was saying earlier, like, I'm a people person. I'm a hands-on kind of guy. You know, we do have a great amount of data and just the time that it goes into it. Mm-hmm. But it's not even just like the data putting in, we're on system and having to go back and put in all the things that we did and stuff like that. But even when we're planning and prepping for programs, we're right. Planning and prepping for the needs of kids. So it's not just data going in and just typing in, but it's just the need to be around your computer, putting stuff down. You know, I'm into the doing, you know, I'm into the hitting the ground, running, boots on the ground, getting it done. But it's, you know, this is the behind the scenes things that you got to make sure that a program is done right. Everybody, you know, we went to KU last week, and I had to email every principal and every teacher and every counselor, mm-hmm. and they had to get permission slips home and follow up on permission slips. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, the little, you know, the behind the scenes things, the logistical things that you got to get done. But I mean, that's what makes programs go. And that's what allows the staff and the school to see you doing things the right way when we can get those things done. So, you know, even in light of some of the tediousness of it, you still got to get it done.
Well, and it's part of what allows your programs to continue on after you're gone.
Yes, ma'am.
Because then people can see the work that you've done and just kind of pick up from it, because there's a paper trail, which is really great.
Ma'am. You're exactly right.
Okay, so third and final extra credit question. If you could pick one superpower to have, what would you choose?
Oh, man. If I could pick one superpower to have, what would it be? Oh, man. You would put me on a spot like that, wouldn't you?
Yep, it's the part. It's like the entire point of the podcast is just to put my guest on the spot.
Culminates and comes to this point right here.
The final question.
No, I think if I think if I had one superpower, it makes me think of the X-Men and the girl Rogue, and she would take people's power from them and give it to herself.
Yes.
But I think, like, I think my superpower would be like giving power, like healing, not necessarily to heal myself, but to heal others. Like when you begin to see something in somebody else or need that somebody has, just being able to have the superpower, just by me laying my hands on you, touching you, and just being able to feel that need and heal up what you have. I mean, we see so many times where a young person, or not even somebody at school, just somebody in general, has something beyond our means to support. And we end up doing all we can and trying to figure it out, but we know deep down inside we don't got the capacity to support it. But if I had the ability and the capacity to heal and to support where needed, you know, when it's out of our realm of support, I'd love to be able to have that power. So if you got that, Victoria, pass that along to me, please.
I'll let you know, okay?
It'd help me in my work a great deal.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, what you're doing is already like full of superpower options and choices and ideas. And I mean, you're already doing superhero style work, basically. So, you know, thank you, Michael. And thanks for being a great site coordinator, for helping the students, for being all in. And thank you for talking to me today. I really, really enjoyed hearing your story. And so thank you.
No, definitely. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity. Appreciate much thanks to CIS, Communities and Schools, for giving us this platform to affect kids and to affect people and to affect schools and to ultimately affect the community. Just thank you for your time.
Yeah. So with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. For more information on Communities and Schools of MidAmerica, please check out our website at cismidamerica.org. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on social media at CIS MidAmerica. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.